language of film suddenly coming into stark relief that you don't see anywhere else. Because that's what film, above all, brings that is different from other mediums, is that jump from the third person to the first person and back to the third person, and the various narrative shots that construct that. So it really opened up my view of what films could be, and from that I went from being a barely passing student to becoming a top student in English. So I went literally overnight after seeing this film. Suddenly it made sense what the whole purpose of telling stories were. When I was taught English in school, I found it particularly boring. It didn't seem to relate to much. I was much more interested in science. But I left the science behind, and I went from science to arts. Now, some people might think that's not the way to go. They try education to encourage the reverse. But for me, it was the best thing. So that's the sort of the background to it. Now, obviously, we've got this world of film, which is this multi-layered text that has all these things that go into it, which is a group exercise that everyone puts together, but somehow it forms into a kind of clear narrative. It has something that goes on, and that's the subject of this talk today, is how we get from these shots to sentences. Because one thing that we notice in times of change, like we are now, is that at the same time there's a lot of desire to move forward into a new world, and there's a lot of interest. There's also confusion, people are worried, and so fundamentalism arises. And we have a lot of educational fundamentalism as well as we have religious fundamentalism at the moment, and so we have educational fundamentalism in England and maybe certain bit growing in Scotland in certain pockets as people try to deal with the world. I think we are there to try to resist that and to try to put a more positive view of where the world is going. So I wanted to kind of talk about how we can compare film to traditional texts so that we can circumvent that whole problem. Because sometimes people see it as an illustrative form. That was the reason we were sent to see the idea of frames that are put together that somehow will tell us what's going on. But I don't see any difference at all. For me, a shot is a sentence. And when you study them, I think what you can learn from it as well is that by looking at these shots, we can not only work out how sentences are constructed and why they're constructed, but also how they follow, how they create paragraphs, and how they turn into chapters. Now, a lot of people will say, is it really a sentence? Well, in my sense, it has to be, because you have a definite cut, you have a definite full stop. There is no way that is not a sentence. It may be a short sentence sometimes, and there are many short sentences in films, but they are sentences. There are also very long sentences. There are Proustian sentences. There are Russian Ark type sentences, which are 93 minutes. So you can have a long take. There's nothing against the long take, but that is a specific type of sentence, which we will come to in a minute, about what that means. So we have these, instead of adverbs and things, we have our shots, our cuts and angles, our transitions that allow this to happen. Now, in some ways, this is another of the big differences between film and traditional texts. Traditional written, sign-based texts engage your imagination in the imagination of the world, the mise-en-scène, what we see. So we are spending so much time thinking about what is in that mind, in that scene, that we don't think so much about what is going to happen next. Whereas film is much more about that questioning process of what will happen next. And this works out in terms of how films are constructed. Now, obviously, we have our kind of shots, cuts and angles, one of Scott's old diagrams from before, and they all have their different functions. I'm not really going to talk about this today, because you'll know about this. There's lots of stuff you'll find on the screen, shorts, Scotland on screen, languages on screen, website that deals specifically with shots and how they all put together. So I'm going to look more specifically at the logic, the causality that works between one shot and the next, one sentence and the next. So if we accept, and some of you may disagree, that the shot is the film sentence, then the question is, how does it connect with the next sentence? How do we know what goes from one sentence to the next sentence? Now, anyone who's ever worked in editing or has watched a student film will probably have the answer to this, which we'll come back to in a second. But if we were to ask a very simple sentence, how do we know what to write or film next? How do we solve the problem? Because this is something that every child has to deal with. How do I come up with the next sentence? So how do we get to the next sentence?
Because?
Yes, exactly. There is the because. So, we have the cat who is running. This is our sentence. We don't need to know the object. We have the subject, the action, some mise-en-scène description that would be covered in other ways in the slide-based text. But the way we look at it is essentially through asking questions. Now, there are a number of questions that we can ask. These are just a few of them. Whose cat is it? Why is it running? What is important about the back door? Whose house is it? There are many questions that could lead to the next sentence. But since it is running, that is the most dominant question that needs to be answered. So in drama, that is the one we would normally cut. In comedy, we might digress and show something completely different, because that's what comedy is about, digression to a large extent. We digress before we reveal, so we play more than that. But certainly in terms of a dramatic narrative, we're going to want to answer what that question is. So it works on the process of question and answer. And this is exactly the same as grammar books. If you look in traditional grammar, this is actually from an American grammar book. The period asks the question marks. When we make a statement, we're also asking an implicit question. The reason why we are saying something is to invite a contradiction, whatever it might be. So we set ourselves up. This is the logic of how sentences work. Now, if you try to teach this to a seven-year-old, they're going to be completely lost. That's why I'm telling it to you, so that you don't do this. But you can show it in a film very clearly, because you can say, how do we know what happens next? Why is it running? That is going to be the dominant question. That leads immediately to the same fact. Then you can say, well, if you were going to write a story, how do you work out what's going to happen next? If you write William the Conqueror was originally called William the Bastard, what are we going to want to know? Why was he called the Bastard? Exactly. Was he a bastard or was he a bastard? There are simple questions that spring up from it. There is always this question and answer. And in film, we refer to it as something else, which is usually called the match cut. Now, this is one possible answer, why the cat is running, just to introduce a bit of violence into it, in keeping with my influence from Polanski. So in the match cut, we can follow the eyeline match, which is here from a Dario D'Argento film, someone having a breakdown in the Musée de l'Art in Brussels. The woman looking at the Bruegel painting and being drawn to Icarus's fall into the water. And so we see the connection immediately. She looks. What does she see? She sees the painting. How does she react to the painting? She is horrified. What is she horrified by? The close-up. The clear logic. Yes, we move from one to another. And it works in editing, getting back to the point, when you're sitting watching a bad film, as soon as a question is in your mind, that's the point where it should go cut. If it doesn't, you're always asking the question, why didn't they cut? Because as soon as a question is established in the mind of the audience, we want to cut. That's one of the reasons why films are getting faster, because in a sense, we've got quicker at finding where the question is. We're searching for the question in the images, and we want an answer to it. Now, sometimes a filmmaker might decide, well, I'm going to take them to the edge of a boredom, or I'm going to play with them a bit for a specific effect, but still, once a clear question is there, we will want an answer or a partial answer. Now, this is true of all texts, so you can use this to teach kids how to work with traditional texts. Now, here's an example from Psycho. Again, we can see the same type of logic. We see the establishing shots, we know that there's a woman in the car, we see the policeman getting out, we see her, we see him, we see her, and we get the whole logic of it through the cause and effect from each one. These are all connected by questions that link it together. So one thing that I think one can teach young people is that in narratives, it is all about the questions. Bill was talking about this before the break. What is the question? Get young people in control of the questions, then they are in control of the narrative. To understand the process of questioning is what film is all about. Now, sometimes these sentences can move very quickly. Obviously, another one from Psycho. Psycho's a great film. If you haven't seen it, I really recommend it. It's mostly implied violence rather than typical, though there is. Not many people know that you do actually see the knife plunging into her in the scene, but so it's only one shot of the 90 that take place in the 3 minutes. And having said that there are 90 shots in 3 minutes, most of those 90 shots happen in the last minute. So it's an accelerating process as those. So each of the sentences is very short, but each one has something, a shower head, water coming out of the shower head. It's a complete sentence in itself. They just happen extremely quickly in terms of how it pulls together. Now, when we have our match cuts, we have lots of different match cuts. You don't have to know this. You just have to look at what the question is. What is it that connects things? But these things will always connect between the two. So our full stop is basically our question that leads, our implicit question that leads to the next sentence. If there isn't a cause and effect from one sentence to the next, you don't have a narrative. But it also means that if you can get this idea across to young people, there is an implicit question. It means that you can help them with all their composition because it helps them work out what's going to happen next. And this is why when Tim was talking about storyboarding as well, that can be really useful because thinking through all the moments stops what young people otherwise do when they're telling a story, which is to synopsize too much. To go, you know, someone got into trouble because they stole someone's sweets and then they got punished. They can't expand it out, but as soon as they start to visualize it and think about how would we show all the moments, suddenly it starts turning into something that becomes interesting. So by storyboarding, you can also use it as a way to use written compositions afterwards, which helps understand the process of creating paragraphs and what a paragraph is. Now, in sentences, we also have our commas, colons, semicolons, and dashes that reveal new information within a sentence. What do we have in film?
Sound.
We do have sounds. Sound is good, and I'll get to sound in a minute. What else do we have?
Movement.
We have movement of what we're seeing, but we also have movement of the camera. And this is usually what we would think about as being the punctuation. Is not so much the punctuation from the movement of the objects or the subjects in the film, but the movement of the camera. And so we might have a pan, the camera moving to reveal new information. So this is, in effect, how you can teach what a comma is. You can show that and say, well, this is a very simple comma. You know, we see something, and then we see the snow on the other side, and it's more threatening, or whatever it might be. And by revealing this new information, we get a greater sense of immediacy and immersion in the narrative, which also helps. So again, that's what commas are there to do as well. And they work the same way in sign-based text, except they're not as good. Camera movements are much better than traditional commas, colons, semicolons, and dashes, because they do so much more. And one of the classic examples would be High Noon. High Noon, don't know if you haven't seen it, this is one of the classic Westerns from the Golden Age to Western, but it starts off with the man who is a coward who has been left behind because it's a matter of honour that he's got to fight the gunfighters even though he knows he's going to die. So he starts off at the beginning of the camera movement as the hero, but the camera rises up and as it reveals him as smaller and more insignificant, it changes the relationship of the frame. So instead of being on the level and seeming to be walking through the frame, he is now walking uphill effectively within our two-dimensional frame. The crane shot allows us to reveal so much more about what might be happening or what may or may not happen next than you can ever do really in a sign-based text. It's such a more powerful way of revealing certain types of stories. That's not to say there isn't a great deal you can do with written text. Obviously, all films are based initially on written text because these are in the screenplays. When you write a screenplay, the length of the sentence is the length of the shot. The level of detail in the sentence is the amount, how close you are to it. Everything about the way screenplays is written relates directly between a written text and an audiovisual text. That has to be together. It may not be exactly as that once it's gone through the process of being filmed, but a good screenwriter always suggests all these things in the first instance.
So you have this kind of way that the camera can do movements. Now, there are also other movements, some of which are frowned upon. This would be frowned upon by the Cinémathèque Française, I'm sure. Here we have what's called a zoom shot, which obviously is... Name of the beast. Anyway, this is one of the classic ones, a dolly zoom, no less, from Jaws. I'm sure you've all seen it. You know how it works. We see it in our shot form. It doesn't really do justice to it that way, but then if we see it in the form of how it's intended, again, that sense of vertigo that it induces in our idea of what he's seeing and the kind of sense of nausea that it creates, and seeing it again and again might induce greater nausea than it would have done if we hadn't had such a good lunch. But so we get that movement where we have these movements within the sentence. So how do we establish parallels? Well, in a sense, they work through something called establishing and re-establishing shots. Now, these were developed by my namesake, my racist great-grandfather, D.W. Griffith, who was really responsible for bringing out the whole of this film language together in about 1913, 14, and 15. And in terms of this, the idea of the establishing and re-establishing shot is really important. And it's not only important from the point of view of the continuity system, which is to try to make the whole thing seamless, but also in conveying information. Now, typical example, this is not pure establishing and re-establishing, but we get a sense of, by going into details, we come out, and then we come out to a wider shot again. So we go in and out between different levels of details. So this becomes effectively a paragraph. A better example might be from the Maltese Falcon, where we have a clearer establishing shot at the start, then we see our character, and then we see how the situation has changed as a result of what's going on. By going back to very similar shots, we allow ourselves to see what is changing in the action. Now, this creates a certain paragraph structure, which we can see, and which is, again, built in into the writing of the screenplay. Because every time you have a new camera placement, you write a new paragraph. That's the way screenplays are written. But it's there for us to see. We can show it, we can also show what it means. But it becomes a unit. In some cases, it can become a scene, or it can become areas of a scene, different breakdowns of sequences within that scene. But they usually will be interspersed then with these re-establishing shots that just remind us where we are, remind us of the spatial geography, but also what has changed, how the drama in the scene has changed the nature of the wider world. Now, sound. You mentioned. So what does sound do? Well, sound can be very important in introducing new paragraphs. And there's one way that works, which is to do with the way that music moves. So you will have music works in kind of phrases. So if you go, twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are, up above the world so high, like a diamond in the sky, it goes out and back. And people talk about this movement of out and back. And so when you go out, you can introduce something new, because people know that it's still within the same piece of music. So you can introduce a new image and a new line of thought and a new line of questioning shots along that presence. And then it comes back, and when it goes out again, you can introduce something new. And this is why people are given Oscars for writing music. It's not that they're given Oscars because they write great music. Most of us, any musical purist will say, ugh, it's not much, and they call that classical music. It's rubbish, or whatever it might be. But they're not paid for doing that. They're there to help guide the narrative. And that's what they do very well. And that's why they get awards for it, for being helping tie it together by showing this paragraph structure. But you can show it very clearly. You will also see it more clearly when it comes down to new chapters, because new chapters can be introduced in that way, where the music changes, and we know that we're going to be introduced to a new character point of view, a new side, it might be even a new plot line, say in something like Pirates of the Caribbean, where we have two plot lines, hence why it's 180 minutes long instead of the usual 120, because it's in fact two films. Sounds can also be used to bridge between things, to show where paragraphs are connected towards continuity, and one of the most famous ones is the one from Lawrence of Arabia, where he blows out the match, and the sound of the blowing out of the match carries over into the desert. So even though we don't then see him for 2 minutes, we know he is there, because we've heard that sound bridge. And we pick this up, and even though we're not necessarily noting it consciously, we know it. We might be going, then, for the next 2 minutes, where is he? Where is he? And David Lean was very good at taking you to the edge of boredom. French filmmakers are also very good at taking you to the edge of boredom. Some take you over the edge of boredom. But, but they got better. They don't stir so many cups of coffee and smoke quite as many Gauloises as they used on the set. But it is important to think about what is going on to show these techniques so that people can observe them. And again, they help them show how narrative is constructed in other forms, because the text also develops in that way. Another example, just to see a screenplay, a Russian screenplay from the period of the Eisenstein and Russian formalism, this was how they wrote their scripts. They had camera movement along the bottom, all laid out in diagrammatic form. Then they had the contrasting thing, because they were working more with the visual composition of it. Then they would have the music that would accompany everything, and then the storyboard of the shots all together. Now, this was obviously in the days before dialogue, but in terms of putting it together, the level of deliberacy in terms of how all these things were connected in order to create movement was incredible. And so when you see some of these scripts, they are really totally fascinating to look at. Now, we also have other devices. Different types of breaks, our dissolves, our irising in and out, and various types of transitions. These are slightly out of fashion at the moment, these types of things, but they do have certain functions. We still see them now and then in terms of ways, breaks between sentences, breaks between chapters, and sometimes in paragraphs. So we have a lot of these techniques that are still there. Now, as I was saying before, it is something that we do want to try to get across, I think, to young people, is that film is not something special, but it does have certain special attributes. And this is the key thing to get across, because I think sometimes we've tended to think of film as being, well, let's have a play around and see what we can do, but there is a very strict, codified system that underlies film. You don't need to be an expert to understand it, you just need to look at it. A few cues can really help unpick this, and if you can then communicate those to young people, it will not only help their ability to understand films and to explore them and to see new things, to think about when that point of view changes, why something has happened at any particular point, but also just generally in their composition to understand the logic. Because I don't know about you, but when I was taught English, it was very much, you know, you were told, well, the sentence has got to have a subject, a verb, and an object, it starts with a capital letter. It doesn't explain anything really about what it's there to do. But in film, you can really show what each one does and how everything links. So by stopping film, showing those connections, showing interesting points where there's a break, interesting elements, even in a short film, and that's why we tend to concentrate on using short films in terms of Scotland on screen, languages on screen, screening shorts, is so that you can then just pick them apart in detail within a lesson and show how all these things come together. And you will also see the dividends if you use those kind of storyboarding exercises to help build up written composition. Because if you get someone to storyboard what they're going to do in advance of writing it, they will become much better, because they can draw the picture and then they can write underneath what is happening in each scene. And by the time they finish, they can then just take out the writing and in turn put it into their composition, and then they have their composition, and so maybe add then a few wow words and it'll be all splendiferous. But more important than the wow words is the connections. Why do we go from one sentence to the next? So thanks very much for that, and